wanted to choose a topic that would be fitting as we come out of the days of unleavened bread, as Mr. Franks did as well for the In Accord lessons that he learned. But I wanted to choose a topic that would tie in with some of the things that we've been looking at already and continue in the process. Now, God gave Israel something very important after the Passover and after the days of unleavened bread. When they were finally out of Egypt, they had left sin or left Egypt behind, and God was leading the children of Israel into the wilderness, and he led Moses to the top of Mount Sinai, and they gave him his law. Now, it's thought that the law was actually given on the day of Pentecost, which makes sense because the Spirit of God later in the New Testament was given on the day of Pentecost, and you have the law and the Spirit both being given on that particular day. So he gave him his law, and I say that because we've covered recently, it wasn't the law of Moses. It wasn't that, you know, people say, oh, Moses' law was done away. God's law wasn't. And this was established long before Moses, but God gave Moses that law, and of course we know that he was restating the law, because it tells us earlier that Abraham kept my commandments, my laws, my statutes, my judgments, and we know that the law was in force, but he was giving it to Moses, and that's why when he came to the Sabbath, he said, remember my Sabbath day, because the Sabbath was already given as a command. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 1. When I attended summer camp many decades ago, a long time ago, we had to memorize the Ten Commandments, long form. Those of you who went to camp many years ago, we had to learn and repeat the Ten Commandments all in long form. So all the scriptures from the time the commandments start till they get to the end, we had to know and be able to repeat that. Can you repeat the Ten Commandments? It wasn't just don't steal, don't kill. It was starting off with, and God spoke all of these words saying. So we read here that God spoke these words saying. He said it came from God. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He says, I'm going to give you something, and this was being given to Moses, but it's given to the people. He said, I am the Lord your God. And he said, don't forget that I am the one who freed you. I'm the one who brought you out. And then the Ten Commandments are given or re-given to the children of Israel. After the Passover lamb and the sparing of the firstborn, which they experienced. And then the baptism, because it says they were in type, baptized in the Red Sea. They were immersed. They had the cloud above them, waters on both sides, ground underneath them, technically speaking, they were covered, they were buried, and God says they are buried in baptism. So they experienced the baptism in the Red Sea. Now God's giving them his law. The first commandment, verse 3, says, you shall have no other gods before me. When a person wants to begin counseling for baptism, that's one of the first things we go through. Do you believe that God exists? Do you understand who God is? He says, you shall have no other gods before me. Have we ever thought about what that verse really means? No other gods before or in front of the true God, right? Now, some look at it and they say, well, no other gods before God. God has to come first. Is that what this particular verse is saying? Is it telling us that if we have other gods, God has to come first? Well, absolutely not. It's not about order. It's not about you shall have no other gods in order before me. Strong's Concordance actually describes this word as gods. It says gods in the ordinary sense, as opposed to the true supreme God. So he says you shouldn't have something that is an image or something that is a makeup God or made up God before you have the real God. Brown Driver Briggs definition says rulers or judges, divine ones, or anything godlike. So he says you shouldn't have anything godlike before me. Now, Barnes Notes says of this phrase before me, and this is an important phrase to understand. Barnes Noah says, the phrase before me is literally before my face. He said, don't have any other gods or godlike things before my face, visible to me. Meaning no god should be worshipped in addition to Yahweh. The polytheism which was besetting sin of Israelites did not, in later times, exclude Yahweh. When the Israelites went back and started going with other gods, other worship and other forms of religion, it said they did not exclude Yahweh, but associated him with false deities. We see that today. How people say, oh, you know, Christmas, it's all about Christ. Well, it has nothing to do with Christ. But they've blended it and said, okay, let's put Christ in Christmas and call it about Christ. Well, that's what they were doing here. It says the polytheism of the Israelites, they didn't exclude Yahweh. They saw the miracles. They saw what took place. They understood that he was a God, but they blended him and did not worship him as the only God. And again, we see that today. People exclude God, but they blend with other gods and worship something that God is not. Now, some worship Christ directly. They say worship Christ, and God the Father has no part. But they worship their image of Christ or what they think Christ is like, which is a false god, having something that is not true. The New Living Translation puts it this way, you must not have any other god but me. And that's what God is saying when he says, before my face, you have no other gods before me. He says, don't have any other gods but me. Don't have any gods that are present before me or that I can see, because he said they're not real God. He said there is only one God. And so New Living Translation says, you must not have any other god but me. Gill's exposition of the entire Bible says, you shall have no other gods before me. This is the first commandment and is opposed to the polytheism of the Gentiles or Egyptians from which Israel had just come out. He said, you came out of Israel, came out of Egypt, and they had all of these pagan gods. They had all of these different gods that they worshipped. And he said, there's no other god but me. He said, and whose gods some of them may have had favorable opinion of and a liking to. The Israelites may have liked some of the pagan gods of Egypt, and that's not uncommon, to like some of the gods and like people today. Oh, I like Easter. I like Valentine's Day. I like Christmas, because they like some of those things that are associated with it. But they may have actually even liked some of the pagan gods, and that's a likely statement based on some of the things that we will read. And again, today, people like pagan gods, and many of them don't even realize they're worshiping a false god. People like worshiping the image of Christ. They like keeping those pagan festivals and false gods, and they blend the ideas together, and God becomes second nature, a second form of worship. But God says, I don't want any other gods, period. No other gods but me. When we look at what the Israelites came out of, to say that Egypt had a lot of different gods is an understatement. I'm only going to name a few here. They had the sun god, Ra, which was the head of a falcon or a sun disc. They had a music god. Now, a lot of people think, oh, this is he's a rock star. He's a god of music. Not like this one. Hathor has horns of a cow and a sun disc. Now, some of these things you go, well, I don't know how the image associates with the god, but they had that. The god of destruction. Now, most people today, you say, you know, what god do you worship? The god of destruction. That would probably be a shock, and you'd go, okay, I want to stay away from that group. Sekhmet is his name, and he was represented in appearance by the head of a lion. The sky god. Now, it's N-U-T. I don't know if that's Newt or Nut. But the sky god was blue with golden stars. Now, there were other sky gods. One of them they called Horus. Another one was Tefnut, the goddess of rain. She was a sky god, but she wasn't over the entire sky. She was only over rain. Then there's the earth god, Geb, represented by colors of plants and the Nile mud. Now, how disappointing. You're a God, and it's like, okay, but yeah, you look like the dirt. The God of the dead, Osiris, dressed in white with a crook and a flail. The desert god, Seth, of an animal head and a long curved snout. Seth was also the god of storms. So he's the god of the desert, and so if you're looking out at the desert and a storm's coming, okay, well, Seth is sending that. He's the god of storms. Then there's the god of Pharaoh, Horus, which was the head of a hawk and the crown of Egypt. The god of magic, Isis, a throne on the head or holding a baby. The god of wisdom, Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, the head of Ibis. The god of embalming. Now, you got to have a god of everything you do, and there was a lot of embalming that took place. So you have the god of embalming, Anubis, which was the head of a jackal. The god of justice was a woman with a feather in her hair. The god of creation, Amun, crowned with feathers. The god of cats. I don't know if you were cat lovers, but the god of cats, and was represented by the head of a cat. Now, again, these are only a few. There was the god of the Nile, the god of weather, the god of lightning, which was Baal, or B-A-A-L, the god of ice, the god of fire, the god of snow, the god of summer. They had a god for almost everything that took place in life. From ancient Egypt, .co.uk.gods. Some gods and goddesses took part in creation. They believed, well, if we've got all these gods, they're the ones that put all of this together for us. Some brought the flood every year. Some offered protection. Some took care of people after they died. Others were either local gods. So you have, now, how would you like, who is your god? Well, he's not the supreme god. He's kind of under everybody else. He's a local god. They had local gods who represented towns or minor gods who represented plants or animals. They had a god for so many different things. The ancient Egyptians believed that it was important to recognize and worship these gods and goddesses so that life continued smoothly. Now, if you want life to continue smoothly and you go, okay, then I need to pray for rain. I need to pray to that god. I need to pray that the storm coming is not going to affect us, so I'll pray to that god. I need to pray for justice because my neighbor's accusing me of something, so I need to pray to that god. I need to pray to the god of the sky. I need to pray for the god of sun, that we get the sunshine we need to do the crops that we have. The god of the desert to make sure everything that we have comes. All of these different gods, and so they would pray to multiple gods. They didn't have just one god. And all of these were false gods that were created by men. And the stories, there are stories that go along with each of these different gods and how some of these gods got together and created another god as a child. And that's where a lot of you see it in Greek mythology later. But they had all of these different gods that you worshipped. Can you imagine trying to remember all of these gods? I need to pray to the god of rain, but what was the name? Who is my god that I'm worshipping? Some today pray to other gods besides God the Father, besides having one God. Some pray to the idea of having Christ, and I'll pray to Christ, but they don't understand who Christ is, what he did, and that he represented the Father, and that he's part of the family of God with the Father. No, they pray to Christ or their idea or the vision of Christ. Some pray to St. Christopher. You know, Mr. Franks talked about all his travel and the trip that he went on and all the difficulties. People wear the little St. Christopher emblem and they pull it out and they'll pray to St. Christopher for a safe flight or safe travel. He's the patron of travel and is supposed to bring good luck. Many pray to other saints for various things. There's the saint of occupation, the saint of travel. There's the saint of illnesses, churches, and kind of goes back to what Egypt did. Let's have different saints or different ones that we pray to about different things. Again, it's not much different than what the Egyptians did, so that life continues normal. I'll pray to St. Christopher so that my flight and my life continues as normal and I don't have interruptions. What did God tell Moses to explain to the people? Let's go to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 13. It says, then Moses said to God, indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they say to me, well, then what's his name? Because they want to know, okay, we've got all these other gods. We've been around the Egyptians for hundreds of years. What is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. Now, most of us, if they said, well, what is your name? Well, I am who I am. Okay, but what is your name? No, God was stating, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Now to us, again, in English, we're going, that doesn't really make it clear. But it's a powerful statement, and we know from the New Testament and what happened with those who approached Christ. And they fell backwards when he stated about the I am. But it's a powerful statement. It means I am the eternal one. I am means I have always existed. I am existing now. And I'm present with you. And I will always exist. It's I am in every age because I have always been. I am, I've always been, and I am who I am. So he was stating very clearly, I existed prior, I exist now, and I will exist in the future because I am. I will always exist. In counseling, I take individuals through Hebrews 11, verse 6, where it says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is. And this is what that statement he was making. You tell them, I am. I am the eternal. I have existed, I have always existed, and I will always be there. You must believe that God is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So if we understand who God is and that there's only one God, it makes it very clear that God is. He's eternal, and that family has existed. Clark commentary says these words have been variously understood. The Vulgate translates it, I am who I am. Septuagint translated, I am he who exists. I exist. The Arabic, which other false gods didn't exist, they were in the minds of individuals. The Arabic paraphrases them, the eternal who passes not away, the eternal who doesn't die. It's a God that will always exist. Exodus chapter 6. Exodus chapter 6 and verse 5. He says, and I have heard the groaning of my children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. He said, I made a covenant with Abraham and the children of Israel, and he said, I remember that covenant because he wants to have a relationship with his people. And that's what the Spring Holy Days are about. In verse 6, it says, therefore, say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. The eternal one who has always existed is the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of Egypt. I will rescue you from their bondage. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and great judgments. I will take you as my people. I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So God wanted to be a part of their lives. He wanted to be their God. He wants to be our God or your God. So what happened? Was God their only God, and did he remain their only God? Exodus chapter 32. Exodus chapter 32 and verse 1. This is after God had delivered them, after they'd seen the miracles performed. And it says, when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, he'd gone up there, and they're like, he's taking too long. Here we are, just waiting for him to come down, so we're getting kind of antsy. The people gathered unto Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that shall go before us. We want something to worship right now, And so make us a god. Instead of just saying, how do we worship God who delivered us? They said, make us a god. Can you believe that after all of the miracles, after things were performed for them and they walked through the Red Sea that was parted for them, it came down on the Egyptians. They're free. They finally have their freedom. And they said, make us a god, because we don't know what happened to Moses. He's just delaying his coming. Again, people say, well, I can't believe they went right back to what they were in before. And yet still today, as God opens the minds of individuals, sometimes they go right back to what they were in before. Like I covered recently, like a dog returning to its vomit. They go back to something that is disgusting to God. So they said, for as this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt. Now we're kind of getting back to their mentality, where their thoughts were. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out. We don't know what's become of him. It's almost to say, well, he's just a man. We need a god. We want something that we can worship here and now. Now, this verse where it says they gathered themselves against Moses, or against Aaron, rather. So they gathered themselves against Aaron, saying, we don't know what happened to Moses, so make us some gods. And what were they looking to? What were they wanting? It wasn't the true God. It was something different. Verse 2, it said, Aaron said to them, break off your golden earrings, which are in your ears, the ears of your wives and your sons and daughters, and bring them to me. And so all the people broke off their golden earrings, which were in their ears, and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and he molded the calf. And he said, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Now, there are some who think, well, Aaron was innocent. He was forced to do something. But once he made this calf, he said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. This thing I just made is what brought you out. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, fashioned with a graving tool after he had made it into a molten calf, the words transponded and rendered should be, he framed it with a graving tool in the image that he made, and then having poured liquid gold into the mold, he made it into a molten calf. It is not said whether it was life size, whether it was of solid gold, or merely a wooden frame covered with plates of gold, but he carved it out and then poured this gold into it as a mold, or poured it over it as a gold covering. But not only did they make a god, and he says, make me a god, so what did Aaron make? He copied it after pagan Egyptian gods. They were going back to Egypt already in their mind. They were just freed, but they were already going back into bondage because they were going back into the form of worship that they were that they had been called out of and drawn out of. Verse 5 says, so when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. Now, poor innocent Aaron, they made me do it, but I'm the one who told them, this is your God who brought you out of Egypt. Now he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. It's a feast to the eternal. Now, you may have had some going like they do today. Well, I know that's a pagan god, but we're picturing it to be the eternal one, the only God, the God that revealed himself as the I Am. Verse 6, they rose up early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Not your typical holy day. The Lord said to Moses, go, get down. I think that was probably spoken very boldly to Moses. He said, for your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. He's like, these aren't my people. You brought them out. You're the one who led them. But he said, they have corrupted themselves. And you can almost see the righteous anger of God fuming when he says, go, get down. We're done now. You need to get down the mountain because this is ridiculous what's going on. Strong says of this word corrupted, they have corrupted themselves. comes from a primitive word that means they have decayed or they have ruined themselves, they have corrupted or destroyed themselves, and they're going to perish. Brown Driver Briggs described this as ruin or to pervert. They had perverted themselves, and they were quickly becoming corrupt. And so he says, go get down the mountain. Verse 8, they have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. He said, I just brought them out. We just got through the Red Sea. Now I'm giving them my law. And he said, they've quickly turned aside. They have made themselves a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed to it. And they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. It's no wonder that God became furious with Israel. He brought them out. He delivered them. He performed all the miracles. He was trying to get a relationship with them and help them to understand. And they go, no, this golden calf, that's what delivered us out of Egypt. God's probably going, yeah, Moses, your people are turning corrupt. They were still worshiping the I Am because they said, this is your eternal. This is the one who delivered you. But they were worshiping this as another god, as a god that they created. So they gave the molten calf the glory for leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. And why a molten calf? Why that kind of god? Was it just something they thought up? Well, okay, we got a lot of cattle. Let's just do a cow. Jameson Fawcett Brown says this idol seems to have been the god Apis, the chief deity of the Egyptians. Okay, if it's the chief god of the Egyptians, that's who delivered us. Well, wait a minute. No, you were delivered from Egypt. You came out of Egypt. You got away from Egypt, and you want your god to be the chief deity of Egypt. Why would you want a god that kept you in slavery for years and years, or allowed you to be in slavery, if that was the god that you worshipped? So it said he would have been the chief deity of the Egyptians, worshipped at Memphis under the form of a live ox that was 3 years old. It was distinguished by a triangular spot on its forehead and had other peculiar marks. Images of it in the form of a whole ox or a calf's head on the end of a pole were common, and it makes a great figure on the monuments where it represented the van of processions, and they borne it aloft on men's shoulders. Here's the chief god of Egypt. Exodus 32, verse 19. So Moses comes down the mountain and he sees them singing and dancing, among other things. And so it was, as soon as he came near the camp, he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger became hot. He was probably going, now I know why God got so upset and said, go, get down. He cast the tablets out of his hands, broke them on the foot of the mountain, and he took the calf which they had made. So it must have not been life-size giant calf, but he said he took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire and ground it into powder and scattered it on the water and made the children of Israel drink it. He said, you want a god? Here, let's make it a part of you. Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them? In other words, what were you thinking? I left you one job, take care of the children of Israel. Aaron said, Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. I had very little to do with this. For they said to me, make us gods that shall go before us, as for this Moses, the man who brought us out of Egypt, we do not know what's become of him. And I said to them, whoever has gold, let them break it off. And so they gave it to me. I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. I love that. It's like the mind of a small child thinking, okay, he'll accept this answer. I gathered it, I threw it in there, and out walked this calf. Sorry excuse. English Standard Version says, out came this calf. Now, a calf and a bull, when we look at the symbolism of those, JewishVirtualLibrary.org says, the narrative of the golden calf cannot be understood without relating it to the erection of two other golden calves. at the temples of Bethel and Dan by Jerome, Jerome the first of Israel. Not only are the general features of the story similar to both accounts, but the explanatory formula in Exodus 32. These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. Because they had two different areas that this calf was located. The bull had an important role in the art and religious texts of the ancients and the Near East. The storm god, Hadad, is frequently represented standing on a bull. Now, from artifactory.com, Apis was depicted as a bull. This was the Egyptian god of strength and fertility. The spirit of Apis was said to represent in the body of a real bull, which was kept by Pharaoh and looked after by his priests. You know, they had these specific markings that they wanted, and so they bred and kept these specific type of cattle in Pharaoh's presence. At the end of the old year, the Apis bull was then slaughtered, and its flesh was eaten by the Pharaoh. It was believed that Pharaoh then would inherit the great power of Apis. Eat a nice steak, and you become even more powerful as a ruler. Each year, the priest would search for the new Apis bull, which would then be given a life of luxury until the ritual was repeated. Now, a life of luxury for a cow is probably like here of the Japanese beef, where they massage it, play classical music, and the cow is like, I have got the best life until he's ready. This is what was happening with the bull. But the bull was something that was represented as, that's where Pharaoh got his power, so let's make a bull. And again, they were making a bull because of what they had come out of and the things that they had seen. Okay, we go back to the law. Besides the Ten Commandments in Exodus, I want to look at God reemphasizing his law in Deuteronomy, but with a little bit different slant. We saw what God said, and the initial thing he said, I am the Lord your God who has brought you out of the land of Egypt. You shall have no other gods but me. Now we go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4. He says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Again, emphasizing there is one God. There aren't multiple gods. That's the God of fire, the God of sky, God of the desert. There is one. And here is how God says, I want you to put me first, how I want to be the one God. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. Don't divide your attention to multiple gods and spread it out. He said, you worship me with your heart, your soul, and all your strength. Going down to verse 10, it says, So it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large, beautiful cities which you did not build, houses full of things which you did not fill, hewn out of wells which you didn't dig, vineyards and olive trees which you didn't plant. And when you have eaten and you are full, verse 12, then beware lest you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He says, don't go back to forgetting who I am. Verse 13, you shall fear the Lord your God and serve him and shall take oaths in his name. You shall not go after other gods, lowercase gods, as in any other forms or things that present themselves as gods, or the gods of the people who are around you. Paul tells us in Acts 19 that the things made with hands are no gods. He said, if you formed it from your hand and you carved something out, you can't say, well, now it's a god. You made it. So you would be the creator of that god or the maker of that god, which would make you higher than that god anyway. Verse 15, it says, For the Lord our God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord your God be aroused against you and he destroy you from the face of the earth. He says, you don't want to get on the wrong side of God. He says, verse 16, you shall not tempt the Lord your God as you tempted him in Massah, which means a place in the desert. When he led you out and you tempted him because he delivered you, he gave you food, he gave you drink, he destroyed the Egyptians, you were free, and he was giving you the law, and you said, make us a calf. He said, as you tempted him in Massah. So he tells us in verse 17, he tells us how to serve him and not tempt him. He said, you shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, his testimonies and his statutes which he commanded you. Now, he didn't say keep Moses' law and Moses' statutes. He said, keep diligently the commandments of the Lord your God and his testimonies and his statutes. You shall do what is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with you and that you may go in to possess the good land which the Lord swore to your fathers. He wants to give it to you, but he wants you to have the right relationship and he wants you to be his so that he can. We notice further in Joshua, Joshua chapter 24 and verse 18. Joshua 24 and verse 18. Said, the Lord drove out from before us all of the people, including the Amorites who dwelt in the land. We will also serve the Lord, for he is our God. Okay, he's performing what he said he would do. So he's our God. Joshua said to the people, you cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He's a jealous God, and he will not forgive your trespasses nor your sins. He's saying, you can't have two. He said in verse 20, if you forsake the Lord your God and serve foreign gods, then he will turn to do you harm and consume you after he has done you good. After all these good things that he's provided for you, he said, don't just think that everything is going to go your way if you don't serve God. People said to Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. Joshua said to the people, you are witness against yourselves that you have chosen the Lord for yourselves to serve him. And they said, we are witnesses. Just as in counseling for baptism or somebody preparing to make a covenant relationship with God, we say, count the cost. Because if you say, I'm going to follow God no matter what, and then you walk away, after God's given you his spirit, after he showed you the mysteries and opened your mind to things that you didn't have any clue about, and you walk away from it, he says, like it is here, you're witnesses against yourselves. Now, therefore, he said, put away the foreign gods which are among you and incline your heart to the Lord God of Israel. So put away those foreign gods, have nothing to do with them anymore. Put away the strange gods that are among you. People said to Joshua, the Lord our God we will serve and his voice we will obey. And again, that did become a witness against them. What strange gods do we see today? It's not the golden calves. It's not sun gods, for the most part. There are people who still worship the sun. We see idols, crosses, steeples. That's part of worship, and it's part of the gods that they worship. But today, we see people that are drawn off by other gods, and it's money, position. They're drawn off by traditions, which is false gods, of Christmas, Easter, Halloween, the world's traditions which are based on and come from false gods. Their jobs become their god, and they put their job before God. And God, as God says, don't have any other gods, don't have any other authority or replacement in front of me or in my presence. People worship a long-haired Jesus, a false Christ. People today still worship angels. Oh, when you die, you become an angel, and people pray to you, and they worship pleasure, entertainment, astrology, weaponry, and even war. There are people who are so into war, they idolize war itself, and war becomes their god. Now, some of these aren't wrong by themselves or of themselves. Money's not wrong. He said, he doesn't say money is the root of all evil. It says money is a root because money can become what people serve. But we don't say, well, then I don't want anything to do with money. Haven't heard anybody say that. But we don't say, well, if jobs can become a god, then I won't have a job either. I'll get rid of jobs. I'll get rid of house because house and cars become people's gods. And no, those of themselves aren't wrong. If they're within God's law and we're not putting them first, or that becomes our God that we serve. As a God, all of these things are wrong. So how should we keep the first commandment? Well, God has informed us, no other gods before me, or no other God but me. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. He warns us, beware lest you forget your God, meaning you have to keep in a relationship and steady contact with God. Fear the Lord your God and serve him. Keep the commandments. And God says the commandments are love towards God and love towards your neighbor. You shall not go after other gods or the gods of the people which are around you. That was another warning that was given multiple times. He says, get rid of your foreign gods. Joshua said, if you want God as your God, get rid of all the foreign gods. I want to take some time to look at some end time events, just for a moment. 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. And then we could say, well, you know, God called me into the church. I would never let anything come between me and God, and going after false gods, there's no desire to do so. And that's true. Most people have that as what they're thinking. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. But know this, in the last days, perilous times will come. We have perilous times now, but I think perilous times are coming as has never been before. And it is prophesied to. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters. Now, God says, love me with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. But here it's saying they're going to be lovers of themselves. Lovers of money. Boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good. They're going to be traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure, and again, pleasure can become a god for people, and for some, it's a drug. It's addictive. I need to feel like I'm receiving pleasure, whether that be visually, physically, in what I experience. Lovers of pleasure, rather than lovers of God. God says you have they're going to have all these different attitudes and characteristics that replace their love for God. Revelation says, come out of her, my people. Don't be partakers of her sins. There's no difference in what he's saying at the end in Revelation is what he told the children of Israel. Come out of sin and get rid of foreign gods. He says, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins and that you receive not of her plagues, for her sins have reached to heaven and God has remembered her iniquities. It says, don't become a part of all that's going to happen in the end time, just like Israel went back to having these gods. There's a proper fear and a proper worship of the one true God. Let's go to Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7. This wasn't just an Old Testament commandment to have God first above all things. Acts chapter 7 and verse 36. He brought them out after he had shown wonders and signs in the land of Egypt and in the Red Sea and in the wilderness for 40 years. He said, God performed enough miracles to show you that he was the only God. This is that Moses, whom said the children of Israel, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you will hear. This is he who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles given to us, whom our fathers would not obey, but they rejected, and in their hearts they turned back to Egypt. There, God says, I want you to love me with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. And it says, their hearts turned back to Egypt. We want a golden calf. They even turned back and said, it was so much better with the leeks and the onions and all of the good food we had when we were in captivity. Now in verse 40 it says, saying to Aaron, make us gods to go before us. For as for this Moses who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what's become of him. He repeats what we read in the Old Testament. They made a calf in those days, offered sacrifices to the idol, and rejoiced in the works of their own hands. Now, whether that's physical works that are created or whether somebody in their mind creates something that is their god, you can't say, well, if I don't actually make a physical idol out of wood or gold, if I just have this mental image that I worship. And you'd be surprised how many people in their mind say, I know I worship God. I worship in my mind. You're not going to see me worshiping God in a specific way. It's in my mind. I have this image of the God that I worship. Do we see how man worships what he himself has created? Verse 42, Acts 7, verse 42, said, God turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven. Now, we saw that some of the gods of Egypt were the god of the sky, god of stars, god of planets. It says, he turned them over to worship the host of heaven, as was written in the book of the prophets. Did you offer me slaughtered animals and sacrifices during 40 years in the wilderness, O house of Israel? He said, do you remember where all of that came from? In verse 43, you also took up the tabernacle of Molech and the star of your god Remphan, images which you made to worship. He said, you began to worship images even back then of those Egyptian gods. They worshiped the stars or astrology, and for some today, that is a big form of worship. He then says, I will carry you away beyond Babylon. Now, we just recently looked at that, and the children of Israel, or the children of Judah, rather, being drawn and taken away from in captivity beyond Babylon. It's not just with all the personal gods that people have. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1. Now, he's speaking to the church because he says, now, brethren, you don't call everybody else out in the world brethren. At least I haven't heard most people say, yeah, I consider all those out there my brethren. He was speaking to the church and he said, now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and the gathering to him, we ask you, and this is talking about the end of the age. He says, the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. He said, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word, or by letter, as though it was from us, that day had already come. Some were teaching, well, it's already happened, Christ returned already. Almost like, well, he came and you missed it. We aren't going to miss it. He said, as lightning comes from the east to the west, he will be visible in his return. But they were being told, it's already happened and you missed it. Well, no, we're going to know when he returns. Every single human being on this earth will know when he returns. He says, because he's still talking to the church, let no one deceive you by any means. He wasn't talking to the world. Some say, well, he was talking to the world. The world's already deceived. You don't go out to deceive people and say, don't be deceived. They already are, and they don't even know that they're deceived. So he tells those who are converted, those within the church as brethren, let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless a falling away come first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. Now some think that has happened already. Well, we know who the man of sin was. I've heard 3 or 4 different names of this is the man of sin. Others say, no, that's yet to come. And others say, well, the falling away has already happened. Others say, no, there's still yet one to come. Well, he's telling us what is going to come at the end of the age, right before Christ returns. He said there's a falling away that's coming. And he said, a man of sin will be revealed, verse 4, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. So you have an individual, a man of sin, who's going to exalt himself above God. Now, the commandment given to Israel is don't have other gods. There is only one God. This man's going to exalt himself above God so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. There's still a great deception ahead for mankind. And there's also the warning of deception that even those in the church could be deceived. But God warns his people not to fall for it, not to get caught up in miracles that are going to take place, because not only will this guy, as a man of sin, say, I am God, you need to worship me. Verse 9, the coming of this lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive a love of the truth that they might be saved. He's saying there's going to be a deception, and those who are unrighteous, those who don't have themselves established, will go back to serving and accepting this individual as God because of miracles that he performs. And he said, because they didn't have a love for the truth. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion, and they shall believe the lie. Said, if you're going to go back to gods again, just like the children of Israel, his wrath was stirred up, and he said, Moses, go, get down, look at what's being done. Well, it's going to happen again at the end of individuals who, because they are impressed by the power, signs, and wonders, they give up righteousness, they give up this relationship with God because they didn't have this love of the truth. And God turns them over to be able to believe the lie. And verse 12, and that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. He said they just want to accept what's there because it's going to be easier, it's going to be more pleasurable for the time. God gave the first commandment to worship only him. He didn't say, put me in order and I have to be first in order before other gods. He says, no, you worship only one God, me. God tried to show Israel. Exodus 9:14 says, for I will at this time send my plagues upon your heart, upon your servants, and upon your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all of the earth. He said, there's no other gods like me. I wasn't formed from the hands of someone. I wasn't a creation of someone's mind and they formed something that now I've become a god. There's none like me in all the earth. Isaiah chapter 46 and verse 9. Isaiah 46 and verse 9, he says, remember the former things of old. Just like he told us, do not forget. He says, remember those former things. For I am God. There is no other. He doesn't say don't worship another. He said there is no other. I am God. There is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things which are not yet done, saying my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. He says, there are no other gods. There is no other, and there's none like me. And when you do begin to develop that relationship with God and you understand who God is, and not just that he did the creating, he was the God of the Old Testament. No, understanding as Hebrews 11:6 says, God is. He's present and he is eternal. And he will always be there. There are no other gods. Satan has deceived man into having other gods, but still blend them with the one who was called the eternal and think that is true worship. Jeremiah chapter 25. Jeremiah chapter 25 and verse 5. They said, repent now every one of his evil way and his evil doings and dwell in the land that the Lord has given to you and your fathers forever and ever. Very similar to coming out of sin and walking in a newness of life. Do not go after other gods to serve them and to worship them. Do not provoke me to anger with the works of your hands. He said, don't try to form something into a god, and I will not harm you. God warns, if we create gods and go after them, whether consciously or subconsciously, whether physically or of the mind, we will bring destruction on ourselves. At the Passover, we read in the book of John, this is life eternal, that they may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent. He said, I want you to know the only true God. One final passage. Let's go to 1 John chapter 5. 1 John chapter 5, and beginning of verse 18. We know that whoever is born of God does not sin. You're not going to be captive of sin. You're not going to be a servant of sin. But he who is born of God keeps himself, and the wicked one does not touch him. We know that we are of God. Do you know that you're of God? He said, we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. These are the points that Jim Franks was bringing out, that he recognized at Passover and the days of unleavened bread. This is not God's world. This is Satan's. He said, we know we're of God. The whole world is under the sway of the wicked one. We know that the Son of God has come and has given us an understanding that we may know him who is true. And we are in him who is true, and his Son, Jesus Christ. And this is the true God and eternal life. This is the I Am, the God who has eternally existed. This is the true God and eternal life. And through God's Holy Spirit, we can know that true God, and we can know that we are of God. It says in verse 21, little children, keep yourselves from idols. It's interesting. Here we are at the end of the New Testament, and he says, keep yourself from idols or heathen gods. He says, keep yourself from false gods. It's a warning that he gave to the children of Israel when he identified himself as their God, as the only true God. And it is a message all through saying, don't be deceived. Don't go after false gods. Don't put other things before me as your God. Keep yourselves from false gods. The first commandment is to have no other gods in the sight of the one true God. Or as God very adamantly says, you shall have no other gods but me.